Welcome to the Radio Book Club, a collaboration between KGNU Community Radio and the Boulder Bookstore. I'm Maeve Conran. My co-host, as always, is Arsene Kashkashian, who is the head buyer of the Boulder Bookstore. And this month, we have been reading My Absolute Darling by Gabriel Tallent. And you selected this book. Why, Arsene?
I've been hearing a lot about it, you know, for a few months. This is one of the more highly touted debuts of the year. And also it tackles some pretty difficult issues. And I thought it would be interesting to get Gabriel on the show. I met him in New York at BEA Book Expo. And so I thought he'd be a good guest. And so I thought, let's tackle it. It's not an easy book, but I think we'll get into some of that as we talk to him. But again, I think it's one of the more highly touted books. It's on the New York Times bestseller. You've kind of been everywhere, Gabriel. NPR, New York Times reviews. So it's kind of the book that's really out there right now, and I feel very privileged that we're able to get Gabriel into the studio.
Well, we're delighted to have you here. Welcome to KGNU and the Book Club.
I'm honored.
It is quite a debut. It is really, for a first-time writer, and we'll get into some of the plot points as well, but there really are some themes set in Northern California, a place that you grew up in yourself, and I definitely want to talk about the sense of place, but the protagonist is a 14-year-old girl, Turtle, who has actually different names because her dad calls her Kibble. Other people call her Turtle, but she was christened Julia.
Yeah, and like at school and grown-ups call her Julia, and her grandfather calls her Sweet Pea, and she's referred to also, she's the titular, My Absolute Darling. And with each sort of the different names showing how different people are contesting her identity, and I really was drawn to the idea that she would have a secret name for herself to sort of show that she is searching out her own image of herself and contesting that against who other people see her to be. And that phrase, My Absolute Darling, representing as well the way in which her father fails to take her as her own young woman, like, and he sort of sees her as an extension of himself, right? He sort of fails to reckon seriously with her independence, which is a theme in the book. And I think a central problem of violence and entitlement and a misogyny.
Violence, absolutely. It goes throughout the whole book. But I really like that idea of this 14-year-old girl who is coming into puberty, but desperately trying to be her own person when her father tells her, I own you. He enacts all kinds of awful violence on her. So it goes to some dark places.
I thought it was interesting. You know, it's a coming of age story to some extent, but it's also a story of survival. And she's got to survive this cauldron of sexual, physical, and mental abuse. And what drove you to put this character through that kind of tension, that kind of real torture almost, to find out who she is? As a writer, why did you decide to do that? And what do you think it gives you as a narrator?
Yeah, it was a project that I really grappled with, and then I really fought for a clear moral answer of what was the right way to write this book. And for me, one of the deciding things, because for sure, I mean, I was aware that I was writing a difficult book. I was aware that I was writing a very challenging book. And the question is, why not censor the violence? Why not take it out? Why not draw a veil across it? And there's sort of a couple reasons. And one seems to me ethical. Although these problems are really thorny, Turtle cannot draw a veil across her experiences, and I hoped to show the immersion and the inescapableness in a way that would make it seem to the reader intolerable that this should ever be allowed to happen. That my project wasn't to make this violence palatable, but to make it enraging. And so I felt that I had to take it seriously and not pull punches, because I think when you reckon with the awfulness, the inescapable awfulness of this kind of abuse, it should appear to us all as intolerable, and that's how I wanted to write it. And then the other thing is, I knew people with hard upbringings, and I felt that if I censored that, it would be like saying your upbringing, your interiority is too agonizing for you ever to be anyone's hero, for you to be the protagonist of a book. All we can do as readers is look away from your experience, which I felt would be reiterating the monstrousness that some people sometimes feel about themselves, right? Like people feel ashamed because of the violence that happens to them. And I thought that if I wrote Turtle with Dignity, I would show that this violence had happened, and yet nonetheless she was innocent and beautiful and courageous, and a young woman that we value and whose we see that this is not her fault, even when she doesn't always.
The violence that we're talking about, it's inflicted by her father, Martin, who is clearly mentally ill. He's the sociopath, psychopath, some might say. But he basically has this concept, the end of the world is nigh. And, you know, he links it to climate change and the environment is dying. And so he, you know, stockpiles all these weapons. They live quite isolated in these woods. However, Turtle does get to go to high school. And in which case, she is coming in contact with the outside world. But she has this just horrific home life where her father enacts all kinds of just unspeakable abuses on her, and yet you do speak of it, and I'm glad that you explained it in that way, that it's nearly to do a service to the people who've been victim of this violence, because very often you read about this type of abuse, it's sexual, it's emotional, it's physical, and there's euphemisms used and it's always hinted at, but you dive right in there. I mean, did you have a sense of responsibility when you were going so head on to describe this type of violent reality that she was living through?
I have talked to people who suffered abuse, who had questions that it seemed to me awful that they would have these questions, that they would feel alone in particular experiences that they voiced feeling alone in, when from where I sit, it seems a very human thing. These seem like very human things. And so, look, different books tackle this different ways. And I think that is important. Right? Like I don't think that it is the wrong move to draw a veil across this or to use euphemism. That's not what I'm saying at all. It's just that in this book, I wanted not to cut away because I had known people who had questions about what happened after that cutaway. I wanted to speak to that. And I also, can I push back against something?
Please.
Yeah, against the idea that Martin is mentally ill. This is a tough question, and like it's involved, and you're probably like in some sense right. There's a real failure of empathy there. However, I want to resist the idea that this is an aberrant behavior, that this is the work of lone wolves, that this is essentially an apolitical violence, like the result of someone who is sick, because I think that this is a cultural sickness. I think that misogyny, I think that the failure to see women as like, the failure to see women as independent human beings who we are not entitled to is a cultural narrative that saturates our society. And so in that way, this isn't really the work of someone who is sick. This is the most pedestrian kind of violence that happens in our society. It's everywhere, and I would tend to see it as an extension of the vast river of entitlement and self-obsession, narcissism, and toxic masculinity that is sort of everywhere in the cultural narrative. Does that make sense?
It does, and I'm really glad that you actually brought that up, because I do think we are often so quick to label such abhorrent behavior as, how could anyone be so violent and abusive toward their daughter? They of course must be mentally ill, but you've just framed it that if this is really just an extension of what we're seeing in society in so many ways.
Well, Martin, you know, you bring it out later in the book, he comes from a violent past. You don't know, it's not said if abuse was visited upon him as a child, but certainly neglect. He didn't feel loved by his parents. His father, who is very affectionate towards Turtle, was not affectionate towards him, and you find out that this valued knife that he gives to Turtle was perhaps the knife that he used to kill a bunch of people in Korea to visit this violence upon people. I thought it was interesting that that affection, which I've seen that in other families, in other books, and other in real life as well, that skips a generation, where the grandfather is able to give Turtle some warmth. It's really her, the warmth that she has. She doesn't have, you know, she just lives with her father. Her mother died when she was, I think, 9. And the grandfather is the one warmth she has, and yet he was not able to show any warmth to his own son. That kind of skipping of generations or something's going on there. I thought was interesting the way you brought that out.
Yeah, that is a strange feature of the legacy of abuse. And I think that it can be very damaging for people like Martin. Like, children want to believe that the world is a just place. And so when abuse is visited upon you, it can be very hard to make sense of, because it's almost easier to think, like, this is happening to me because I'm bad, than it is to think this is happening to me because the world is unjust, right? And so when you grow up as Martin grows up, grappling with the violence of a parent, you want to think, well, as you mature, you want to think, well, my parent just isn't capable of love, and then to see that they are is sometimes very, very hard.
One of the things, you know, with the way we're talking about the book, I don't want the listeners to get the impression, if you haven't read the book, hopefully a lot of you have, that this book is kind of a beautifully written, very lush book in some ways. Your descriptions of nature are amazing. And often Turtle goes to nature immediately after the abuse and somehow collects herself, kind of deals with maybe that some of that self-loathing she has. So maybe I thought if you could talk about what's the importance of nature to Turtle, and perhaps by extension, the importance of nature to yourself, why that is such a major part of the story. I think it's almost as major of a part of the story as the abuse is the nature and the ability for some redemptive healing perhaps to come through nature.
So one of the central ideas of the book is seeing other people clearly and taking care of other people. And this is, right, Turtle's father's central failing, right? He has trouble treating his young daughter with dignity. And one of the dangers, one of the things that I wanted to write about is Turtle as a person whose soul is in peril, right? She's at risk of repeating this. And we see a lot of vitriol in her, right? And a lot of misogyny. And I think that she is in a precarious point where, hurt in the ways that she is hurt, she's struggling to be more than her emotional wounds. And for her, one of the redemptive things is to see and love a world outside of herself. That sort of gives her something to live for. And I tried to write her love and her sustained engagement and her attention to the natural world, to the creeks and the trees and the tide pools where she grows up, because that's very sustaining for her. Like, even when she is not loved enough, her love of these wild places is very clarifying to her. And so they're sort of like redoubts, right? Like they're a place that she can go to try and see the world clearly when she is most confused and most lost.
Can I have you read a passage? This comes early in the book, but it's after that there's some sexual abuse. And I think this is a passage where she does go into nature, and I think it highlights some of the way the book is written.
The spring here pours from a mossy nook in the hillside, and where it falls, it has carved a basin out of the living stone, a well of cold, clear, iron-tasting water, big as a room, thatched with logs worn feathery by age. Turtle sits, taking off all of her clothes and laying the shotgun among them and slipping feet first into the stone pool, because here she seeks her own peculiar solace, and here she feels it to be the solace of cold places, of a thing that is clear and cold and alive. She holds her breath and sinks to the bottom and, drawing her knees to her shoulders with her hair rising around her like weeds, opens her eyes to the water and looks up and sees writ huge across the rain-dappled surface the basking shapes of newts, with their fingers splayed and their golden red bellies exposed to her, their tails churning lazily. They are bent and distorted, hazed the way things are underwater, and the cold is good for her. It brings her back to herself. She breaks the surface and heaves out onto the logs and feels the warmth return and watches the forest around her.
That's author Gabriel Tallent reading from his novel, My Absolute Darling. He's our guest on the Radio Book Club this month here on KGNU, a collaboration with the Boulder Bookstore. I'm Maeve Conran with KGNU, Arsene Kashkashian, the head buyer with the Boulder Bookstore, as always, my co-host in the studio. She has a shotgun here. You mentioned that at the beginning of that passage, and guns are all over this book because her father, Martin, Turtle's father, believes the end of the world is coming. He has stockpiles of guns and ammunition. And there's very detailed passages of, you know, shooting and targets and of cleaning the guns, particularly Turtle really taking apart the guns and cleaning it. Did you have experience with that? Was that something you had to learn and do research to make sure that it was authentic?
That was a research project, yeah. When I knew that guns were going to be a big part of the book, I didn't want to rely upon stereotypes about guns because I felt that they were misleading, that there's a whole mythology of guns that isn't necessarily very much rooted in their reality. And so I thought that it was important to own these guns and shoot these guns and clean these guns so that the guns would be carefully observed and so that I would have a sense of what Turtle would learn from them, what Turtle's experience of them would be.
I thought as the book goes on, the relationship between Turtle and the guns and Martin and the guns is very revealing. Turtle is constantly cleaning the guns. She's caring for the guns, maybe more than they need to, you know, just every night. You know, I think at one point, I'm not sure if it's her grandfather who I think says, well, why are you cleaning that gun? Or somebody says to her, you know, like, you know, does that gun really need to be cleaned? Maybe it's Martin. Where as the book goes on, Martin's guns get, they start jamming. They're not loaded right. And you see that his lack of care for his daughter is being shown in his lack of care even for the guns, which he seems to be, think are so important. So I thought that was very interesting to watch how the guns played out in the different characters' hands.
Objective correlative is an important, like, narrative strategy in the book. But there's a way that I think that it is good for us as people to develop habits of care and attention. I think that it's hard to care about some things and not others. Like, when you're talking about the most important things in your life. And so I think that it's good to be a person who takes the time to care for the things and the people that are important. And that is for Turtle a sort of a rigorous strategy of mind. Like when she is most alone, caring for the guns is a meditative time when she affirms that she respects herself and respects her tools and respects the things she relies on. While in Martin, there's a profound lack of care, a profound failure to engage with his own self, and a failure to take that time for the things and people around him.
I want to talk about some of the other people in the book. Right now, we're really focusing on the grandpa and the father and Turtle, but she does come in contact with, Maeve said, as a teacher in her middle school, Anna. There is a time when she meets a couple high school boys, and most importantly, to some extent, I think, is that one of the boys' mothers was her mother's best friend. And yet these people, they kind of express some concern, but they don't really get involved. They don't do enough. And I thought that was interesting that in our society, it seems like we're pulled back from other people. It takes an awful lot for us to get involved in somebody else's life. You know, I just thought that was one of the harder things to read. And some, you know, there's obviously passages that are very hard to read because of the abuse is going on. But as a parent, to think that there's these other people in the community that perhaps could have helped but didn't, or didn't do enough to help, I found to be kind of painful as well. And I just wanted your thoughts on that.
I find it painful too. I want that for our society. I want that for myself. I think that we all want that for ourselves. And we want to believe that that is true of the children in our communities. This was my experience and my culture, I felt. A culture that cut young women loose, essentially, to die. A culture that didn't take the care and attention. You know, this is one of the most troubled elements of our national culture of independence, is that sometimes we don't help each other. I think it's painful, but at this, and like, it's important to remember that because the book is told in close third person, where we have access to Turtle's mind, we know the crisis that she is in, and we're aware of what needs to happen, but other people in her life aren't. Mm-hmm. Right? Other people in her life aren't. And it's important to remember that many people who suffer abuse lead lives of invisibility, where the abuse itself is sometimes invisible, and it's very hard for people to take drastic action across a gulf of uncertainty like that. Like, we as a culture, we punish and disincentivize that, and so long as we continue to punish and disincentivize that, this will continue to be a problem. But look, this is also just one narrative. Like, it's a narrative that is rooted in things that I think to be true, and was my experience with survivors, that they were abandoned this way. But it's not always true, and there are other narratives out there and other people who had different experiences. I think that's a very hard thing about telling these stories, is that it's important to remember that this is one voice among many.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting is at one point in this voice, Turtle does tell of her abuse to Jacob, who's a teenage boy. And they're kind of in this desperate situation. And she says, "You've got to be strong." And then she tells the story of when her father beat her with an iron from the fireplace. And he says, you know, if you told that to any teacher, you would be pulled out of that situation. He recognizes it, but nothing exactly comes of that moment, which, of course, it's hard. He's a 15-year-old boy, and I don't know. He seems not to, even though he's from a stable family, which is a complete counterpoint to Turtle's upbringing, his family house. I mean, you couldn't have a more opposite kind of thing. I thought that was interesting, is that she did open up, but she didn't open up as saying, "I'm being abused." She opened up as like, this is what makes me strong. And I thought that was a very interesting take in that situation on her own peril that she was in, that sometimes she didn't quite maybe recognize it or realize it in the way that the reader does.
Yeah, you know, Jacob's infatuated with Turtle, and it's very, like, she is to him a very dynamic, self-determining person. It's sort of hard for him to, his only strategy is to plead with her, but he doesn't want to do things that are against her wishes. Like, he doesn't want to out her, and these are like thorny problems for teenagers. I think teenagers sometimes get confessions like this and are in real doubt about what the right thing to do is.
And at one point, she does actually ask an adult for help who's a friend of her father's, and he just doesn't believe her. He's like, "Oh, he wouldn't do that. Martin wouldn't do that, your father." But early on, the teacher, Amy, recognizes that there is abuse, and she identifies the hallmarks that Turtle uses misogynistic language herself, and that, you know, the different behaviors that she displays. And you really encapsulate the psychological damage done, the physical, the sexual, the emotional damage, but the psychological damage done to somebody whose primary caregiver from the earliest time they can remember is incredibly abusive, and at the same time offering the love that they so desperately crave. I mean, we talked about the research you had to do for the guns. I mean, what research did you do on the psychological impacts of people who've had this kind of abuse? You know, so it could be authentic and true to people who've lived through it.
I grew up in a culture of misogyny, and paid attention was my research course in that. And, you know, I have heard stories, you know, I right, like I'm writing across a gap of privilege, right? And I am sort of sitting across the table of gender from this character. But I have seen many people and many young women work to accommodate and adapt to violence that happened to them in their lives. And I have seen that struggle from my own particular limited vantage point, and thought that I had things that were true. I thought that I knew things that were true. And this is one of them. The incredible grief that people feel for having colluded in their own protracted abuse, right? For having actually taken part in that project. And so that was an important thing for me to get at, because I thought that if I wrote it honestly, you as the reader would exonerate Turtle in a way that she cannot exonerate herself. Like, you would see her dignity and you would see her innocence. And that might be helpful for those of us who have made mistakes like this and who have a hard time thinking about it. She's afraid of the, like, it's important to remember that to Turtle, she's not navigating a dangerous patriarch and a loving, safe society. She is navigating between a dangerous patriarch and a society that she also feels is dangerous. And she's not wrong. Like, when Turtle leaves, like if Turtle gets out, she's not going to get out into a world free of misogyny. She's going to get out into a world in which she is still at threat, right? Where she will escape one abuse and then have to navigate a society in which threats are everywhere.
Well, one of the characters, I can't remember if it's Anna the teacher or Carolyn the mother of the one of the boys she meets, says directly, like, you need women in your life. You don't have any. There's, I can't remember the exact phrase, but there's something like, you need a woman to some extent, because, you know, implying to some extent that the care that you can get from a woman is going to be different in this society than what you're going to find among men. And this woman, no, I think it was Carolyn, because she knows Martin.
It's Carolyn.
Yeah. And I thought that was very interesting. And yet she doesn't get that. And towards the end, there's another young girl that Turtle ends up caring for, that she ends up being, in some ways, the woman in that girl's life. And caring for that other girl is what enables her to somewhat break that cycle, to finally figure out what she needs to do.
I'm right there with you that that caring for other people is Turtle's essential, like, that is what, like, it's great help to Turtle when other people care for her. That is a great help for her. But what saves her in the end is finding the capacity to care in herself. I'm going to push back a little tiny, tiny bit about the idea of gender, because, you know, Carolyn says that that's Carolyn's viewpoint. And I do think that women should have women role models in their lives. But as the child of lesbians, you know, I grew up essentially without dudes in my life. And I don't think it did me a lot of harm. I don't think it, you know, and so, like, I don't think that's the issue here, right? Because I'm sure that there's some young gal growing up raised by two male parents. Mm-hmm. And gender is not the issue. She can, whatever, like, elements of femininity or gender performance she needs to learn, she can learn a little later. The essential thing is that you grow up loved and cared for and seen, right? And seen as a young person. So I don't think it's the fact that she's growing up without women. I think that she's growing up without respect.
There is so much in this book, and it's an amazing read. My Absolute Darling, the debut novel by Gabriel Tallent. Quite a debut indeed. And we're just delighted to have had Gabriel join us in the studio for the book club. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And as always, at the end of our book club, we announce what we're inviting listeners to read along with us. So joining us on November 23rd, we'll have author James Anderson, and his book is Never Open Desert Diner.
James Anderson. It's a book about a truck driver who has a route through a desolate area in Utah, which if anybody out here has driven through parts of Utah, you know how desolate it can get. And
sounds amazing.
Yeah, there's this woman in an abandoned housing development that's not quite built. He discovers this woman playing cello, which seems kind of surreal. And through this relationship, they start secrets start coming out, and there's this never open desert diner is a diner that's there that's this action centers around. It should be a lot of fun.
Well, read along with us and hear James Anderson in conversation at the book club on Thursday, November 23rd. You can find all of our book club podcasts on iTunes, particularly the after hours at the book club, where we have extended conversations, and we'll have an extended conversation there with Gabriel Tallent. Thank you so much. You've been listening to the Radio Book Club on KGNU.